We are in the book of Daniel, chapter number 11, a vision that Daniel had in the year 535 BC, after a prolonged fast, in which God's messenger gives him detailed information about what will happen in the future relating to the Jewish people that have returned from Babylonian exile. In particular, this section prepares the Jewish people for the great 2nd century BC crisis that is related to the beginning of the Hanukkah celebration. That is the abomination of desolation that is set up by Antiochus IV, and the pushback that is done by the Hasmoneans, and the great victory gained by Judas Maccabee, and the rededication of the temple that happens in 164 BC. These events, though, are part of a larger group of events that the angelic being lets Daniel know about ahead of time. This is all in chapter number 11, and it is sometimes hard to hear it and appreciate it. Sometimes you need to see it. So for that reason, I have generated a handout that goes with my teaching through this chapter, and I've attached it to the audio file of this program that is on the internet on intotheword.net. So search that out, and I think you might find it easier to absorb some of this information. So we're in chapter number 11, and we're going to start at verse number 10, where it says, his sons, and the his there, that's reference to Seleucus II, who was in control of Syria from 246 to 226 BC. So his sons, the next two sons that follow him, that would be Seleucus III, who is from 226 to 223, and Antiochus III, also known as Antiochus the Great, who is from 223 to 187 BC. So his sons shall wage war and assemble a multitude of great forces, which shall keep coming and overflow and pass through, and again shall carry the war as far as his fortress. Now, his fortress is a reference to the Ptolemaic king down in Egypt, because what's happening at this particular time in history, future to Daniel, past for many of the Jews reading this, the northern Macedonian kingdom of Seleucia is trying to push southward into the Jewish area, into the Promised Land area, and take that over. It had been under the control of the Ptolemaic kingdom out of Egypt ever since the breakup of Alexander's kingdom into four portions. And so we're seeing now a shift of the Jewish people from the orbit of the Macedonian Egyptians into the orbit of the Seleucid or Syrian Macedonians. Now, the Ptolemaic kingdom is not going to give up without a fight. And so we read here, verse 11, the king of the south, moved with rage, shall come out and fight with the king of the north. That's Ptolemy the IV, who ruled from 223 to 203 BC. So he was mostly against Seleucus the second. Or excuse me, Seleucus the III. He shall raise a great multitude, but it shall be given into his hand. And when the multitude is taken away, his heart shall be exalted, and he shall cast down tens of thousands, but he shall not prevail. For the king of the north shall again raise a multitude greater than the first, and after some years he shall come on with a great army and abundant supplies. So at first, Ptolemy the fourth did defeat these northern kings, including Antiochus the third, but that eventually gets reversed. We continue. Verse number 14. In those times, many shall rise against the king of the south, and the violent among your own people shall lift themselves up in order to fulfill the vision, but they shall fail. So there was even Jewish revolts against the Ptolemy kingdom at this time. That we know that there was a Jewish rebellion that was crushed in 200 BC. That was against Ptolemy the fifth. Verse number 13. For the king of the north shall again raise a multitude greater than the first, and after some years he shall come on with a great army and abundant supplies. In those days, many shall rise against the kings of the south. The violent among your own people shall lift themselves up in order to fulfill the vision, but they shall fail. Then the king of the north shall come and throw up siege works, take a well-fortified city, and the forces of the south shall not stand, or even his best troops, for there shall be no strength to stand. So now we're seeing the eclipse of the southern kingdom in Egypt. Verse number 16. But he who comes against him shall do as he wills. None shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land with destruction in his hand. He shall set his face to come with the strength of his whole kingdom, and he shall bring terms of an agreement and perform them. He shall give to him the daughter of women to destroy the kingdom, but it shall not stand or be to his advantage. So now we see Antiochus the third being involved here. He takes control of the region of the beautiful land, or of Judea. That happened right around 197 BC. And then he marries off his daughter, Cleopatra the first, to Ptolemy the fifth of Egypt. So now we've got a marital alignment between these two Macedonian kingdoms. That all takes place in 194 BC. And then, verse 18, afterward he shall turn his face to the coastlands and shall capture many of them. But a commander shall put an end to his insolence. Indeed, he shall turn his insolence back upon him. Then he shall turn his face back toward the fortresses of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and shall not be found. Now, without getting too far off into the historical weeds, Antiochus III tries to expand his kingdom all over the map. And he particularly pushes his kingdom westward across what we call Turkey today, into areas that were controlled by remnants of the other Macedonian kingdoms that came out of Alexander the Great's great sprawling empire. But those kingdoms that Antiochus III tries to take by force had alliances with the Roman Republic. And so because of those alliances, the Roman Republic steps up and fights against Antiochus III and beats him in the area we call Turkey today. In fact, he is beaten so bad that he's forced to sign an agreement known as the Treaty of Apamea, Apamea being a town in the center of modern-day Turkey. And he is forced to accept terms of withdrawal of his forces beyond a certain line. He has to give up many of his elephants and many of his triremes, his warships, and he can't move around in the area along the south coast of modern-day Turkey without permission of the Romans. And he also has to pay a huge tribute every year in order to make up for the damages caused by his invasion of the Rome allies. And this puts a lot of financial pressure on Antiochus III and all of those that followed him. And so what we know historically, which is hinted at here in the prophecy, is that he has to go back into his home territories of Mesopotamia and try to get together finances to pay the annual tribute money or the restoration money. And while he was there on one of these expeditions into Mesopotamia, he was attacked by the locals for trying to plunder one of their temples and was killed. That's in 187 BC. And then, verse 20, there shall arise in his place one who shall send an exactor of tribute for the glory of the kingdom. So Antiochus IV is replaced by his son Seleucus IV in 187 BC. And Seleucus is, just like his dad, forced to go out there and try to raise the monies necessary to pay to the Romans every year in compliance with the Treaty of Apamea. And that includes trying to take money out of Judah. And there are some stories in Jewish traditions about how that didn't go so well for those that were sent there to collect those monies. But the next thing that happens is verse number 20 finishes. But within a few days, he shall be broken neither in anger nor in battle. There is a plot against him by his tax collector. And so he is taken from the scene without his son being ready to take over the kingdom, because his son is only 10 years old and he is actually off in Rome functioning as a political hostage as part of the Treaty of Apamea. So the next thing that we read is verse 21. In his place, meaning when Seleucus IV dies, in his place shall arise a contemptible person to whom royal majesty has not been given. So this is going to be the brother of the late king, the uncle of the young man that should have been the next king of the Seleucid Empire. He is going to basically push himself into the power place. He shall come in without warning and obtain the kingdom by flatteries. And this is a key player in the history of the Jewish people. He takes the throne name of Antiochus IV, and he governs from 175 to 163 BC. He seizes the throne by flatteries and force, and displaces his young nephew. And then he becomes a big problem for the Jewish people. Verse number 22, armies shall be utterly swept away before him and broken, even the prince of the covenant. So he even causes great turmoil for the Jewish people and the Jewish faith. Verse 23, from the time that an alliance is made with him, he shall act deceitfully and he shall become strong with a small people. Without warning, he shall come into the richest parts of the province, and he shall do what neither his fathers nor his fathers' fathers have done, scattering among them plunder, spoiling goods. He shall devise plans against strongholds, but only for a time. So he engages in all sorts of activity that is unprecedented, things that had not happened before. Verse number 25, he shall stir up his power in his heart against the king of the south with a great army. So this guy, Antiochus IV, gets it in his head that Egypt ought to belong to him. And so he invades Egypt in 170 BC. He goes against Ptolemy VI. And he is quite effective. He actually takes over large portions of Egypt. Doesn't take completely the capital city of Alexandria, but everything else is pretty much under his control. And then he withdraws from Egypt, leaving it in the hands of some of his subordinates. And then it says, the king of the south shall wage war with an exceeding great and mighty army, but he shall not stand, for plots shall be devised against him. Even those who eat his food shall break him. His army shall be swept away. Many shall fall down slain. As for the two kings, their hearts shall be bent on doing evil. They shall speak lies at the same table, but to no avail, for the end is not yet at the appointed time. And he, meaning Antiochus IV, shall return to his land with great wealth, but his heart shall be set against the Holy Covenant, and he shall work his will and return to his own land. So what happens is, as Antiochus withdraws from his very successful invasion of Egypt in 170, it is with treaties made with the Ptolemies, agreements that Egypt is now going to be under the control of the Seleucid Empire. But Ptolemy VI was lying whenever he agreed to all of those things, because in the back of his mind, he already knew that he was going to reach out to the Romans for assistance. So Antiochus withdraws. He deals with some problems amongst the Jews because the Jews don't like him. They see him as an illegitimate ruler that's full of himself. In fact, let's talk about his name. He takes a nickname upon himself, which he even puts on his coinage. Antiochus Epiphanes. Epiphanes in Greek means the brilliant one, and it's got a double meaning, shiny, but also very smart and godlike. And so the Jewish people didn't like him being so arrogant that he even thought of himself as being godlike. And so they referred to him as Antiochus Epimenes, just a slight spelling change. But Epimenes means crazy guy, crazy man. And so Antiochus was not a happy camper when it came to religious Jews. And so he started constraining some of the things that they did. He cooperated quite well with a couple of different high priests that wanted the Jewish people to quit being so Jewish religion oriented and start being more metropolitan, more cosmopolitan, more like the Jewish or more like the Gentile Greek religion of Antiochus and the Macedonians. And so the next thing that we read is verse 29. At that time, so now we are in 168 BC. He shall return and come into the south, but it shall not be this time as it was before. So he's coming back to Egypt in order to solidify his control there. But he gets met at the border by a Roman. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. First, verse 30. For ships of Kittim had come, shall come against him, and he shall be afraid and withdraw. Now, the Romans had a pretty hefty navy that was already operating up in the northern part of the eastern Mediterranean. Kittim here is actually the name for Cyprus. And the Treaty of Apamea from BC 188 actually required that the Macedonians in Syria keep their operations east of Kittim. And so the Romans had this heavy-duty navy presence that enforced that boundary line. And Antiochus IV was afraid of the Roman navy because he didn't have enough ships to deal with it. Well, what happens is that the Ptolemaic ruler reaches out to the Romans and says, hey, we supply you guys with a lot of the grain that you need for your growing republic and for your growing capital city, Rome. We are being threatened of being taken over by these Macedonians out of Syria. And if they do that, if they take over, your grain supply is going to be threatened. You need to be our ally and stop this guy. And so the Roman Senate sent this former consul, now a general, to Egypt. And the moment that it was heard that Antiochus IV was coming back to Egypt again, this general met him at the border and handed him paperwork that demanded that he withdraw his forces away from Egypt and shrunk even more of the range that Antiochus IV thought he had. And that the Roman Senate was going to have some teeth in this order to enforce it, and he needed to accept this as a fait accompli. Well, Antiochus IV responded by saying, look, I need to talk to my counselors and think about this before I agree to these new terms of my relationship with the Roman Republic. And it is at that point that this Roman general took a stick and drew a line in the sand, a circle in the sand around Antiochus IV, and said, we expect your answer before you cross that line. And this is where we get the modern phrase, a line in the sand. So Antiochus, when he was faced with taking on the Roman Republic even more than he already was, decided he wasn't ready to do so. So he cut and ran. So here, the prophecy written a couple of hundred years earlier said that he shall be afraid and withdraw. Now, what also we know historically happened at this time is that he got word that Jerusalem was in full revolt because a rumor had gone around that Antiochus IV had been killed by the Romans. And so some of the religious Jews had tried to take over from the pro-Antiochus IV Jews. And so fighting was going on between the two groups at Jerusalem. And so we see what happens next predicted here in Daniel. It says, he shall turn back and be enraged and take action against the Holy Covenant. He shall turn back and pay attention to those who forsake the Holy Covenant. So he goes back to Jerusalem in 168 BC, and he begins supporting the work of the Jews that are in favor of abandoning Judaism. There's a whole bunch of them that want to just forget about being Jewish. They want to be circumcised. They want to ignore kosher laws. They want to quit following the holy days, Sabbath, and the holy days of Passover and Pentecost and tabernacles and all of that stuff. They just want to be like everybody else. And they want to worship the gods of the Greeks. And so Antiochus goes back and starts supporting that mindset amongst the Jews and tries to put down the pro-covenant religious Jews. Continuing, it says in verse number 31, "Forces from him shall appear and profane the temple and fortress and shall take away the regular burnt offering." Now, this takes place over time because the first big event happens in 168. And he puts down a rebellion against him by pro-Judaism Jews and supports the anti-Judaism Jews. The following year, 167, he sends someone to surreptitiously disrupt the Jewish religious practices at the temple. That actually happens right around Pentecost. And a lot of people die. And then eventually, later in that same year, he puts out the order. There will be no more sacrifices by the Jewish religious people in their Jewish temple. We'll come back to that story tomorrow.